Accession number 28452, Reel 2.
Incidents. The balloons destroyed the power station at Bolin, about the size of the Battersea Power Station, which was assessed by the senior technical officer in non-technical language as being about equivalent to the loss of a big ship. So we really did hit home that time. Otherwise, I think, you know, it was all little things, little nuisances, really.
Would this have been the only station in the UK that you knew of?
No, there was one at Deal in Kent, but I knew nothing about it. I just knew there was a boom defence station at Deal. I think it was a lot smaller than ours. I think ours was the main one.
And did you know anything about the boom defence itself? You know, apart from doing the grommets?
No, nothing at all, except that they were used as anti-submarine nets, really.
I suppose that part of the of Britain was very important in the war, given its proximity to Europe.
Felixstowe was mothballed. It was just a naval base. All the houses were, people's houses, seaside houses, were boarded up. And the beach was barbed wired. You couldn't get on the beach because it had been mined against invasion, because of course they thought that would be the place where the Germans would invade across the North Sea, on that coast.
And apart from your work, you know, this very interesting and dangerous work, and by the way, I haven't asked you if you experienced any burns or accident.
No, I had my hair singed and my eyebrows singed once from an adjoining tent, not my own tent, where I was being so busy with my stirrup pump, but it went off and quite a few of us were singed, really.
Did you see any accidents yourself?
I never saw an accident, but I know there were accidents. Probably if I was on port watch, the accidents were on starboard watch, so I wasn't there. But there were bad accidents, and we used to go to the girls used to go to a hospital called Trimley St Mary, and they were covered, before people really knew about burns, they would be covered with acroflavine and gentian violet. And you would see the girls coming back from treatment and their faces were either yellow or purple because the dye didn't come off for quite a long time. Mm. But I don't think a lot of girls were burned, but some certainly were.
Has any tribute been made by the country, you know, for the work that was done in Operation Outward?
None that I know of. Certainly not. No, I don't think so. I've never been, before you have asked me, I've never been asked about it. Except by my children, who've relentlessly laughed at it through the years, and said, "Oh, mother and her balloons." The picture, yes.
You've given, very kindly, donated this photograph to the museum.
Well, it's very funny, really. It shows a rather resolute young 18-year-old, I suppose, looking very stern, doing her bit for England. And my children have always laughed at it and said, "Oh, mother, let's not be nasty to the Germans."
What sort of life were you leading apart from your work at this time? You know, was there any social activities?
Well, yes,
we
went to dances and we went to movies and we used to go around in the evenings to all the naffy outlets and buy bars of chocolate and all get very fat eating chocolate. Because of course it was rationed, but if you did the rounds, you could come home with 5 or 6 bars, maybe, which we devoured. We all ate a lot because, remember, we were doing this enormous, hefty outdoor job, and we were always hungry. I used to have 2 breakfasts every morning when I was operating. I used to go in with my hat on for 1 breakfast and my hat off for another, so that I wouldn't be recognised. And the staple breakfasts, I'm going to horrify you now, were big slabs of fried bread with tinned tomatoes on them. And just occasionally you've got an egg on a piece of fried bread. So the food was good, but fattening, definitely fattening. We all put on weight, all of us.
Did you also have any activity on the sea itself? I know some of the wrens there were...
Only by default, which I don't even know if I should tell you, really. Shall I tell you?
Yes, please.
I went to lunch with the first lieutenant of a minesweeper once. Jimmy the One, he was called. Jimmy the One was the first lieutenant. And the minesweeper started to move. And I said to him, what's going on? And he said, oh, we're going out into the North Sea on patrol. And I said, but I can't go out into the North Sea on patrol. And he said, oh, well, you better jump off then. This was at Parkston Quay. And I jumped off, but I'd forgotten that I didn't have my bell bottoms on. I had a slim skirt. And I hung onto the quay for about 2 minutes. And a little sailor who was walking on the quay called out, hang on, Jenny, because they all called us Jenny Wren. Hang on, Jenny, I'm coming. And he dragged me up. And as I was dragged up off the quay, I looked back at the Jimmy, the One on this ship, which was rapidly going away from the quay. And I saw he was white-faced. I think he saw a court-martial coming up for trying to take a wren to sea. I'm sure he had ulterior motives as well. But it didn't occur to me at the time that he had ulterior motives.
So you literally jumped off into the sea?
I remember his name, actually, but I won't tell you it. I jumped off onto the quay.
I missed the quay and hung
onto the top. With my fingertips.
Yes, mind the gaps. Yeah, exactly. But in a big way.
But there was no way I was going into the North Sea. I thought, no, no, I'm not going into the North Sea. And also, I was going to a party that night with another good-looking naval officer, and I didn't want to miss it. So, no, that was quite funny. So I went to sea 2 or 3 yards once.
So how long would you have been on what is now known as Operation Outward?
Nearly a year.
Had things changed at all during that year regarding technology? You know, had there been any improvements or new devices added to the balloons over that time?
No, I don't think there was such a word as technology in those days. No, nothing was added and nothing taken away. It was just the way it always was.
So when you left, was that because the work was declining, or
not really? Most girls didn't stay above a year; they went to other places because it was considered quite a. I suppose I used the word stressful, but we didn't use the word stressful in those days either. But it was considered quite a tough job, and you sort of did your bit and did your time and went elsewhere. I went. Where did I go from? 60 years ago, I have a hard job remembering. I went to Vincent Square and did a job on reception, Vincent Square Hospital in London, for a little while.
What was the significance of that for the Wrens, Vincent Square Hospital?
Well, a lot of Wrens had TB, and it was a TB hospital. Yes, it was.
Quite sad. Say a lot of Wrens had TB?
A lot of Wrens had TB, yes. I don't know why. Sleeping in wet clothes, I should think, probably. Because we all did that at one stage or another. But I did the reception desk there in Vincent Square for a little while. And in early 45, I went to Notting Hill Gate, to Bowden Court, which was a lovely quarters. And I was there all through V1s and V2s, which were quite alarming. The first V1 I ever saw, the first night it came over, I was fire watching on the roof with another wren, and we had raided the galley. I'm telling you, the galley was the kitchen, another naval expression. And we were eating green pea sandwiches, because that's all we could find. So we'd made green pea sandwiches out of bread and butter and green peas. And we were sitting on the roof, fire-watching. And these things with lights in their tails kept coming over and plunging to the ground. And we kept saying, oh, look, we've shot another one down. Look, we've shot another one down. And in the morning, we went to breakfast in Bowden Court, and we were told, do you know what those things were last night? And we said, no, what were they? And they said they were pilotless planes. And a shiver went down my spine. I thought, how terrible. I was really, the only time in the Wrens I think I was ever frightened. I thought, how terrible, with no control over those at all. And of course they went on, and then the V2s started, and the V2s were even worse, because you had no idea when they were coming. They just went off with a double bang as they came near to the ground and hit the ground. And it's only recently I've discovered that the double bang was the thing actually breaking the sound barrier, which is quite interesting. Woomph, woomph, they went like that. And you never knew when they were coming, of course. No air raid warning for those. We had air raid warnings for V1s, but none for V2s. And they wreaked an awful lot of damage on London, but fortunately I was never anywhere near one.
Did you actually see the damage?
I could hear them. Yes, I saw damage. Yes, I did. Yeah. Yes, I saw people running out of burnt buildings and things. Yes. Yes, it wasn't very good. That, I suppose that was the only time that I was even remotely frightened.
And this would have been while you were in the hospital as a receptionist?
No, that's in Notting Hill Gate.
Yes.
I went to Notting Hill Gate and did a job doing the telephone switchboard on the Isleworth Road in the old Fraser Nash Works, which was taken over by the Navy, and I operated the switchboard there for a little while. And then, of course, I stayed out late a few nights and I was on captain's report. Do you want me to tell you about that? And I had to go up to, I think, the Admiralty and march in and hats off and march out and hats off and all quite frightening. And at that time, I had a boyfriend who was on Flying Fortresses in East Anglia, and the naval captain who was dealing with my case said, well, I think, Ben Hampton, the bright lights of London are too much for you. I'm going to send you to the East Coast. And I said to him, oh, thank you, sir. I've got a boyfriend on the East Coast. And the Wren officer who put me up for this awful ordeal, which was quite unnecessary, I'd only stayed out about 10 minutes late, two nights running or three nights running. And she went puce with rage. And I was marched out smiling and happy. And the naval officer who was doing the whole thing had to put his papers in front of his face because he was trying not to laugh. It was hilarious. So that was my black mark in the Wrens, getting sent on captain's report, but being very happy about it.
Did you ever want to become an officer yourself?
No, I hadn't the slightest intention of ever thinking about it. You couldn't become one until you were 21 anyway. I think 20 and a half was the age limit. And I was out of the Wrens by the time I was 20. So, no, I never even thought of it. I had far too much fun to want to have any responsibility. Yes.
I suppose, really, the war was coming to an end, was it? Well, at this time?
In early 45, it was, of course, because we had D-Day in 45.
Yes. Do you remember D-Day, you know, the invasion of Normandy?
I remember it very well, because we were woken up at dawn with wave after wave after wave of aircraft, all with white bands on their underwings going over our quarters. And we all sat up and said, oh my God, it must be invasion, we must be invading. And wave upon wave upon wave went. It went on for hours, aircraft flying over us.
And that would have been Felixstowe?
No, that was Notting Hill Gate.
Notting Hill Gate.
Yes.
Oh, that was
45. D-Day was 45, wasn't it?
Or was it? No, 44.
No, it was 44. 44, so, yes, it would be. I've got my dates wrong. It was 44. Yes. I've got mixed up with Vincent Square and Notting Hill Gate. And I think, well, you'll find out, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yes, the important thing is you've remembered so many interesting
incidents. Well, yes, I have, but I haven't remembered times and dates very well 60 years later.
It's a long time,
it
isn't
it? It's a long time, yes.
Does it seem a long time ago when you look back?
It seems like a totally different world. A totally different world in every possible way. We were quite carefree I don't know. Our country was different. It was totally our country, in a way. Yeah.
How about the end of the war? Where were you when war ended?
I was on Parkeston Quay, Harwich, where I used to have to do the daily state of the ships that were lying alongside. And we heard at about 2 a.m. that the war was over. And I had the keys to the regulating office, because part of my job was to go do the broadcast to the ships over the tannoy to say, will HMS so-and-so move to buoy number so-and-so? And I had the keys to the regulating office, so 4 or 5 of us went down to the regulating office, and we sang Don't Fence Me In over the tannoy, and I think any sailor who was at Parkeston Quay at that moment must always remember that when he hears that song. because there we were lustily singing. Quite forbidden, of course, and quite naughty. But we didn't get into trouble for it the next day at all, because there was total euphoria, as you know, on VE Day. I came home on VE Day and tried to get off to go to Buckingham Palace at Victoria, and couldn't get off. It was jammed with people from the platform to the top. So I went on to where my mother was in Old Woking and danced in the streets and went swimming in the local pool. It was a very, very hot day, May the 8th, 1945. I can remember that. Yes.
It must have been a relief for you that the war was over, particularly, as you say, this fear of the pilotless planes.
Yes, it was a relief. We all thought, all girls then had one thought in mind, to get out of uniform, get back into silly clothes, get married and start a family. And that's what we all did to a girl, really, in a way. All my friends did that.
Yeah. When you look back, do you think that's surprising, you know, in terms of women today, the fact that you had so much responsibility? You were doing a man's job, weren't you?
Yes,
in the war?
We were doing a man's job, but we didn't look upon it as a responsibility. We looked upon it as something we were just doing. We just took it for granted, really.
Yes. And so really, at the end of the war, you had the same aspirations as you might have had if a war hadn't happened.
Yes, I
to
think
get married and
even more so, I think. You know, they say after wars, people have lots of children and mostly boys, because they're replacing the ones that were lost. It's a sort of technical fact of warfare to replace the population that has been lost. So that's what I did. I got married and had a son who's now 57 and a little angel to me. And I've told you my first husband was killed in the Air Force, haven't I? Yes. And I was a widow for 9 years, and then I remarried and acquired two small stepsons, aged 2 and 4, and had 4 more of my own. So I've brought up a big family one way or another. Yes.
Is it your war experience, do you think it's been important for your life, you know, when you think of it? Do you?
Yes, I do. I think it formed my character as a person. I think I'm a different person than I would have been if there hadn't been a war. I'm more able to look upon problems more easily than I would otherwise, I'm sure. And I've had plenty of problems. I lived in Rhodesia for a long time and came home from there with definite problems. And yes, it's made me, as the photograph tells you, more resolute.
That certainly is a very resolute expression.
It certainly is, yes, it certainly is.
I understand you've had something to do with a memorial which has been put on the golf club, is that right?
Yes, there is a brass plaque on the golf club. I first went to the golf club about 12 years ago and said to the captain, you know, we operated from here and I think we ought to have a brass plaque. And he said, we couldn't possibly have that in the golf club. And then the captaincy changed, a very nice captain came, and he said, of course you should have one. And we've got a plaque in the golf club saying we operated from there during the war, which is rather nice. And we went and unveiled it and had a few jars of this and that, and it was very pleasant. They gave us lunch and it was very nice. And it was nice to be back on the golf course again, because it really hadn't changed. The sea breezes coming in the same as they were 60 years ago. And the utter tranquility of a golf course by an ocean, you know, just absolutely lovely.
I expect your mind went back to the war, didn't
Very
it?
Very much so, yes. There were 6 of us who came and we all sort of exchanged stories, you know. It was nice. I think there are only maybe a dozen of us left now out of the 140.
Yes. Of course, it's the 60th anniversary this year, isn't it?
Yes,
the end
is.
Of the war. And has nothing been mentioned
about Boom Defence?
Yes, no. Are you concerned, you and the other women left, that, you know, something should be known about it, that it should be more public? I know you're doing this interview, and of course this will bring it in.
Well, it will, yes. And this is very nice for me, because it's the first time I've spoken at length about it. No, I'm not surprised. So many people did so many things in the war that have never come to light. I'm not surprised that this hasn't really. I'm sorry in a way that it hasn't, because it's quite interesting as a young girl's experience of what happened then.
Well, thank you very much indeed.
You're more than welcome.
It's very kind of you, Mrs. Porter, Tony Porter.
You're more than welcome.
Many thanks.
It's
been very interesting, and you've given very good detail very